Hello, hello, hello.
What up?
Welcome to The Plot Strikes Back. Bum, bum, bum. We are here today to talk about Saving Private Ryan.
What? Possibly
a movie.
The greatest war movie of all time, by the way.
Yeah.
I would say, which there's a lot of good ones out there, but dude, this one is just, and it's good.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure your dad would appreciate this, but I'm sure we could probably do a whole episode on ranking and talking about just every war movie ever made.
100%.
And I mean, which I think would be kind of cool if you're listening out there and you want to maybe hear something like that, if you would listen to something like that as a whole episode, then hit us up on Twitter.
Yep.
At Plot Strikes Back.
No the.
And say like, yeah, that would be a cool thing. Or we might just do it anyway, and you know,
you're just gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. And then listen to it if you'd like. But, you know, recently it was just the 80th anniversary of D-Day for World War II, which
2 days ago.
Yeah, which 2 days ago as of like when we're recording this, but on June 6th, 2024, right, and it's kind of crazy just to think about, obviously, like what happened. And I think it's always really interesting to really read about events and moments in any war in particular, but especially like the more commonly known and you know, widely known wars, right? Like Civil War, World War One, Two, you know, Vietnam. Because then you get into like the other like lesser wars with, you know, the Korean War, Cold War, you know, and it's just sort of like the, you know, the Gulf War and stuff, you know, and the quote unquote War on Terror.
And then, you know. Oh, what else was there? Sandstorm?
Yeah. So it's definitely one of those things where I think to me, and just meaning more so, not that any war isn't meaningless, but war in and of itself is a terrible thing.
Yes.
Because it involves the loss of life. And, you know, you look at the context of any war and it's always just either some sort of political scheme that is just outright bad. And it's like, why are people dying over politics? Or there's a lunatic that wants some sort of world domination or genocide.
He wants some bulls for damn sure.
Yeah. And you know, it's just sort of obviously pretty whack for Hitler to have said,
the perfect race.
Yeah. Which was just, you know, I'm like,
he was an idiot.
You don't even have that. What are you talking about?
Right.
You know, yeah. Was it the Aryan race or something like that? Right. Yeah.
Blonde hair,
like,
blue eyes.
Yeah. Neither of what
stupid ass
that idiot had. So it's sort of like, okay, well,
go back to painting pictures.
Yeah. It's like you go back in time and be like, you never wanted to enter into this world, go back to painting pictures. Imagine if there was like a weird alternate reality where World War II never happened and Hitler became like this, like an historic, like, painter. And like, and then like you get warped into that reality and you're like, wait a second, what's happening here? This is crazy. You're a madman who's killed millions of people and you're a painter in this? No, like I need to get like, no, I can't be here. Like,
time to fix that.
Yeah. I don't know how you fell down those stairways.
Some things always have to happen.
Yeah.
You dying.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, and I think it's definitely a movie, Saving Private Ryan, that when it came out in 1998, right? I mean, I'm 13 years old.
It's three.
Yeah. And I couldn't see it until I was a few years older. But I remember, you know, my parents in particular just saying what an amazing movie it was, but also, you know, because being our parent, like my parents and other parents out there, are in the same age range. Like we had family members or like new people that had family members that fought in World War II or died in World War II. Yeah. So it's like, I've been to that graveyard
in France.
Erie. Yeah. No.
Arlington.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Same.
Yeah.
And it is eerie. It's quiet.
Dude, like, it's just...
I'll never forget that.
It's just sort of like...
My grandfather's buried there.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, it's eerie and it's just haunting. Hmm. Because... And I love the way the cinematography is in that. Just in like how it's just always angled. So you just see all the crosses in rows.
It's just like never ending.
Yeah. And it's like not just like everything is hidden behind one of the crosses. It's, you just see it and it just goes on and on and on until it fades out. And it's just like the idea of that cinematic shot is to show like how many people gave their lives in this. And, you know, like we've covered in a couple other, I think, Fury has one where another great war movie, but how, I guess I should say the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, since we covered that, and again, D-Day would have never have happened had that secret co-op mission by Winston Churchill take place. So again, that's one of those things where the German U-boats would have owned the water, which means we wouldn't have never have gotten to the shorelines of France. And who knows what might have happened in the war at that point.
Yeah.
So, I think for the context of, missions that are given out in war where, you've got Tom Hanks's character,
Captain Miller,
right? He has to sort of take on this mission that he doesn't really want to do, but it comes up from the top brass.
None of his crew wanted to do it.
Yeah. Like they're all very hesitant. And, who was it? It was Eddie Burns's character.
Ryben.
Private Ryben, who was like, well, let me get this straight, Captain. we're going to go get this guy for what? We don't know where he is. He's probably dead. And like, not to say that what they were saying was wrong, because again, like you miss your drop, you're already behind enemy lines. Like, one of the things that is, in context, which you hear a lot of, that happens in Band of Brothers. And again, which is another
World War II.
I mean, it's done by Spielberg as well. And Tom Hanks. So it's like, you haven't seen Band of Brothers, right? Oh, you gotta watch it, man. It's, I think, like, again, that might be one of the best single season shows in history as well, because it definitely has the Saving Private Ryan vibe. It feels just like it's an absolute extension of the movie. And really, like, you could probably watch them both back to back, and it feels like you're still watching the same thing, because it is World War II, and Band of Brothers covers more ground. And, one of the things I liked that what they did in that show was get the dialogue from the characters that are still alive, that actually fought in the war, which is really cool. Cause you see and you hear them talk, and you hear like one of the guys, I forget who it was, but he's saying like how he, after all this time, he's never forgotten about what took place. He's never forgotten about the events, the people that died around him, the people that he killed. It's just, it's like not so much maybe PTSD, but it's just like it had such, it's like such an imprint, and it's such an impact on like the human mind that you just can't erase those things, at all. And, I know there's sayings out there that says war changes a person. And it's like, you watch a movie, for example, and it's like just a movie, but things like that happened in Saving Private Ryan happened in real life. I mean, at the start of the movie, it's just crazy to even think about being in that position, knowing that you're basically cannon fodder. You know, you, as soon as that hatch falls down in the water, you already got bullets flying at you. You got to survive from not, you know, drowning in the water, you know, and you're sloshing through it. You're trying to get, you know, find cover. And I mean, I love those moments of actual cinematography where it's all slow motion and it's, you know, very, you know, dulled out, so you can't really hear anything. And you see Captain Miller kind of just like he's phased and dazed, and he's just like, they're yelling. I'm like, what do we do, sir? What are your orders, sir?
Yeah. What's even crazier is that the water was pretty much freezing.
Yeah.
The bombers that were supposed to bomb the coast missed.
Yep.
The paratroopers that were supposed to parachute behind, in their certain spots.
Missed.
Didn't hit.
Didn't make it, yeah.
Nobody hit, really. So it was a complete failure.
It really was.
So they're pulling up, and they're just getting mowed down.
Yeah.
And it took them like, I think it took them like 6 hours to get up the beach and through the beach line.
Let's say, could you imagine if, like, let's say you made it off the little boat and you're on the shore and you're just trying to figure out a way to get up and to get them out, you know, to basically puncture this line of armor that the Nazis have set up. You know, I mean, and then they finally do, you know, in the movie, and obviously they did in real life, but it's like they get, you know, they find a way to kind of run around and like take out like the you know, the gunners.
Yeah.
And then I love that scene when the guy comes in with the flamethrower.
Oh, brutal.
And just starts roasting them. And then the guy goes, don't shoot him, let him burn. And it's just like,
brutal.
God, man. Yeah. And it's crazy because you see on the beach, there's guys that are being, you know, dragged up the coast, and they're missing their legs. They're missing half their body. And the guy that's dragging doesn't even know it because he's just trying to, you know, to cover him. And he's like trying to help out his, you know, fellow countrymen. And it's like, he gets them up short. And he's like, he's dead.
Yeah. Captain Miller, he's dragging the guy.
Yeah.
And then the explosion blows his lower half off. And then the medic too, the radio guy.
Yeah, he's just calling him over. His face is going. It's just like, yeah. And then he tries to like make a use call. The call.
He's like, aft.
There's a hole in it, and it's
just like, damn, dude.
You got a guy that's picking up his own arm because it got like blown off, and I'm just like, oh my god, he's like intestines coming out, and you get the medics going like he's like telling the other medics like what to do, like he's gone, he's the most injured, like, you know, focus on him or not him, and it's. I mean, you know,
and it's in all within the first like 25 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And you're oh, finally, golly, we're done with that.
Yeah. You get a breather. And that's sort of where we get, you know, the confirmation of there's a new mission that's being rolled out, and you see the reports coming in from the, you know, all the women that are, you know, filing and typing everything up, which, you know, and I kind of thought about that, and it's like, you know, as you know, for the women that had to sit there and basically like endure typing up letter after letter about your son has been killed, your son has been killed, your son has been killed. It's like just to continuously type that over. I can't imagine what they were thinking. 'Cause like, what would happen if like you thought like, or your husband, right? You know, your husband has been killed. What if they were typing up, you know, your husband's killed, and like that's your husband.
Yeah, like their own husband.
Or like it's similar. Like, you know, it's like saying like, oh well, my husband's name is John Smith, and you type like, is that my John Smith? Like how would you, like how would they have kept it together? You know,
and it's tough
because it's like it's the one lady she realizes, she's like, wait a second, Ryan.
Oh, Ryan.
Ryan? This Ryan. Ryan. Oh, wait a second. Wait, wasn't there another one, Ryan, we filed? Hold on a second. And it's like...
Ryan?
It's kind of... I don't say it's a funny scene, but it's the chain of events. It's like, well, she has to go talk to this guy, and this guy has to talk to Bryan Cranston.
With one arm.
And then, you know, which I totally forgot he was in it.
I hadn't seen this movie in a long time.
It's been a while for me. But or if I'll see it on TV, it's like a different spot, so I kind of know where they are. But
yeah,
it's been a while since I've watched it from start to finish. And yeah, and then he has to talk to another guy, and then it basically gets to the like the head general who reads the quote from
Abraham
Lincoln. And which was kind of cool that he had, you know, kept this letter and memorized it essentially. And I mean, I know it's like just the actor remembering his lines, but still, like, just the idea of a general sort of remembering something from Abraham Lincoln, having to like to deliver that bad news, you know,
and then now having to avoid that news himself.
Yeah. And it's like now I am in this sort of same position. And again, I don't know how often that might have happened in, you know, in any of the wars that, you know, our country has had to go through, but it's certainly, it's an interesting thing based on how Private Ryan, played by Matt Damon, when it finally comes to that point and he's like, no, I don't want to go. And he's like, these are my brothers, you know? And it's like, I mean, he's right. You know, that's essentially the only family he really has left is the people that have been fighting by his side and have stayed alive up to this point, you know? And I mean, you also kind of think about the mental warfare that you, because you see the other Ryan that when they first find him, mm-hmm. he's like, my brothers are dead. He's like, but how? They're in grade school. And Captain Miller's like,
they're all so pissed.
You got to be kidding me.
And then they're pissed. Well, they're not pissed when they find Private Ryan. They're just like, huh, there this he is. There's that son well, of a...
Yeah, when they actually find Matt Damon's Ryan, right? He's like, and it just like under the circumstances where, you know, you've got German artillery that's coming through the like this field,
mm-hmm.
and it's like his little Ryan's little squad are chilling in the same grass, and it's like, y'all were here the entire time.
Would you look at that?
Like, what? The chances.
And then they get pissed whenever Ryan doesn't want to go with them.
Yeah, and I mean,
which is fair because they lost two of their squad members. Well, yeah. More, but
technically they lost more. Yeah, but yeah, they lost Vin Diesel.
Caparzo,
and then they lost
Wade.
Yeah, their medic.
Yeah,
you know, like you lost the medic. That is, there goes your healer, and that man, like that whole.
That scene was tough.
That scene is it's a great scene. I mean, obviously this movie has a lot of great scenes in it. But that scene in particular is pretty tough, just because. I think it was Ruben who, you know, Eddie Burns' character, he didn't want to do it. And he's like, I got a bad feeling about this, Captain, you know, and it's like, you know, he's like, this has nothing to do with our mission. And he's like, isn't it our mission to win the war? And it's like, you got a point, Captain.
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, I would have probably brought up like, okay, so what happens if half our squad die? What happens if you die here right now? He's like, well, then you carry on with the mission. And it's like, but that can be avoided. And he's like, but you know, what happens when the next squad comes and gets ambushed? Yeah. And it's like, then, I don't know, put a warning up, you know, like just, you know, I totally get it, but man,
I see both sides,
you know, like it's, that's what I'm saying. Like it's such a sticky situation.
I would have Jackson just line up and take him out,
dude. And he's probably my favorite character, the sniper.
I like Jackson or Mellish. Mellish, I think, is my favorite.
Both died
brutally.
Yeah. Which we'll get to those deaths in a moment. But you know, and you know what guy pisses me off still to this day whenever I watch this movie?
Upham.
Yeah.
Upham. That
that little bitch. Where is he on here? He's like, I just need to translate. It's like, dude, you know
all what? He had to do was walk up the stairs.
You just had to bring the ammo up, and you know, and they would have both been alive still. But no, you know, you're just Jeremy Davies. You know, he's a good actor, but man, I hated his character so much. I still do, because it's like, dude, so I've never seen the battle, and it's like, okay, I just need you to translate. But also, we're in a war, so you have to fire adapt. A gun. You know, yeah, and exactly. And it's sort of one of those things where, like, yeah, in the end, he kills the same Nazi that, like, you know, he kind of shared a cigarette with, you know, while I was digging a grave. And it's like, number one, don't make friends with the enemy. But also, it's like, it kind of spared him his life in the moment. And then, like, you know, in the end, when he's like, I'm all, you know, to surrender, he's like, hey, you remember me? Like, we're good, right? Like,
bam,
bam, shoots him. It's like, oh, now you grow some balls.
And whenever Miller has to go pick him up, he's like, translator, you, all right, cool. Let's go. Album's like, oh, I've never, you know, even fired my weapon. He goes, did you fire your weapon at base camp? Yeah, great. Grab your and let's go.
I love That's
it. Literally all I need.
I love it how he's like, can I bring my typewriter? And he just holds up a pencil, dude.
Yeah, and then he grabs a bunch of his, and then Tom Hanks just throws it back to the ground. He's like, you won't need that. He goes, nope, well, you will need that, though.
He's like, your helmet, you'll need that, you know. But yeah, you need to travel light. And, you know, it's, again, it's sad that Wade dies, because, like, you don't really see it, but it's like after all the dust has settled, Wade's shot, and, you know,
through the spine, I think.
I know it went through. It was a clean exit wound, but he got shot a couple times, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that was a brutal scene.
Yeah, and I mean, like, just the prosthetics of making it seem so real, you know, with the blood just kind of, like, you know, coming out, and and he's like, tell me what to do. He's like, elevate my legs. And, you know, he's like, okay, morphine. You know, morphine. It's like, more morphine. And he's, but he's, dude, like, the part that really kills me about that scene is when he starts saying, mama. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, dude.
Because you know he's gone.
Yeah. Like, it's like, you know, he can start seeing, like, the light in his eyes fade. And it's like, everything is just kind of starting to get darker. Yeah. And it's like, man, you That's know.
Why I gave him all that morphine.
I mean, like, it definitely, yeah, it's exactly. And he's like, just give it to him. It's just like when,
Sergeant Horvath.
Yeah. Horvath just sticks the last one in him. It's just like, damn, man, you know, and obviously, like, you know, Ruben's pissed, you know, cause it's just like, great. We just lost Wade.
Yep.
You know, we lost Caparzo. And again, like when Miller's like, no kids, and, you know, the enemy will use that to their advantage as a tactic to go, you know, and man, like, I really hate that. It's obviously, like, children dying in war is absolutely atrocious. And
yeah,
but I love the way Jackson
takes out
the sniper right through the scope. Just his eyes just gone.
Dude,
love that scene.
It's like, Miller's like, Jackson, he's like, on it. Yep. Puts on his special scope attachment and just cruises up. He's like, don't move, buddy. I got you. And then goes to work. And unfortunately, Caparzo got shot.
Yeah.
I think through the spine, because he couldn't really move.
Yeah. I forget if it was the spine. I know he's, but, like, because he was still moving his arms, but they were saying, like, keep your head down to, like, make it seem like you were actually dead. So that way, like, if he kept moving his head. Yeah. But, like, the sniper is like, well, he's gone. Like, you know, well, who else is trying to save him, sort of? And it's like, oh, damn. Phew! Dead. But, yeah, that scene's, again, it's another great scene, but it's tough because, you know, they lose a squad member, and then they lose Wade. And, you know, again, once they finally find the right Private Ryan, and it's like, we got to hold this bridge. It's a tactical bridge. It's like one of the only ones, you know, still left. One of
two bridges left.
Yeah. And, you know, that whole sort of setting is, it kind of interesting because I think for Matt Damon in that moment, even just acting wise, where, you know, you've got to make it feel like your three actual brothers are dead, and you've got an opportunity to go home. And I, when I was watching it, I was thinking about this, like, what would have happened in, you know, let's say a real life situation where they're like, listen, because if I'm thinking also, if I'm, let's just say a Reuben as an example, right? Or Mellish or whoever, or like, let's say you and I are on Captain Miller's squad and Private Ryan's like, nah, I'm staying here. Like, part of me would be like, I get what you're saying, but two of my friends just died. If I have to knock you out, choke you out, and drag you back home because that's our mission, then sure.
Yep.
Like, our mission comes from top brass.
I did not come for nothing.
Yours does not. I've almost died multiple times, you know? And, you know, and that's like when the, you know, it could be like a weird circumstance where it's like, well, what if his guys start fighting our guys? You know, because like there's a point, there's like, again, the moment where Reuben almost walks off the mission.
Yep.
And Sergeant pulls his gun and is holding it straight at him. And it's like, this is your squad. You're about to kill one of your privates, you know? It's wild. And it's like, man, like, what if there was a, like, you know, an in-house scuffle, you know, between two squads, you know, that are just, well, we got to defend the bridge. Cool. We got to bring this guy back home because, you know, a top general, chief of staff said, you know, you got to come home now. You know, I don't want to have to go tell your mother, like, you refused. And he's like, tell my mother I died, you know, whatever he said, like saving this bridge and, you know, and fight alongside my other brothers. It's like, it's, you know, in the movie it worked out, but I think in like a real life setting, like it's almost a very selfish thing, you know, because the movie, yeah, again, it's written to work out that way. And again, I think it's a selfish thing because if he were to have died, his mother's going to get a fourth letter, you know, fourth folded flag.
And you fail your mission.
And you failed your mission. Yeah. And again, it's, you think as an example, yeah, let's just say maybe he had a change of heart and he went with Captain Miller's, you know, troop, or they dragged him along and there's like, okay, well, yeah, figure out how you're going to hold the bridge. Figure it out on your own. Like, we've got to do our mission, you know, and two things would have happened at that point. They could have encountered that German battalion that's marching towards the bridge, and they could have been like, man, you know what? We can't stop them here, so maybe we go back to the bridge and warn them they're coming, but they're again, like, then they don't have time to set everything up.
Yeah.
And they're screwed. But maybe they find a way to go around them, but it's like, how do we let them know that it's happening?
I would have blown the bridge anyway.
That's what I was saying. I was like, you know what? Like,
you've already got a rig. Just blow it.
Yeah.
Saves everybody the trouble. You just hide up there in the.
Because, like, you know, if it wasn't for the P-51s that came in and literally saved him at the end, they would have had to have blown the bridge anyway. So, you know, and again, for the sake of the movie, it worked out. But it's like I try to watch it this time and have like this like real life type of mindset or situation where it's like, if I know that we're being pushed back to this point, you know, and I'm like, just blow it. Especially for Captain Miller, who got, you know, shot in the chest, you know.
Sarge dies.
Jackson's in the tower doing work, but then that tank just
takes him out,
and just, you know, which is, that's a brutal way to go, you know.
Mellish is the worst.
Yeah, because it was Mellish and who else was up there with him?
One of the
other guys, right?
One of the airborne guys that they met who was already defending the bridge.
Yeah, he gets shot like through the neck.
Yeah, he's like bleeding out as like they're fighting. They like roll over him.
Yeah.
You just get that slow motion. Not slow motion, but that just slow.
And you know, and again, the entire time that's happening, all
fucking Upham.
Upham had to do was
walk
up the stairs and then just go freeze. Bam. Or, you know, and it's like, and the one thing, if I'm Mellish and like I see like Upham just there, he's just like shaking, like, and I'm like, shoot him or I'm gonna die, and if I don't die, I'm gonna kill you myself, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I would have been like, you know, if you don't shoot him and I somehow, you know, stop him, I might kill you myself.
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. So it's either you kill him and I don't kill you, or I, you know, I mean, obviously he dies, but it's like, yeah, that was a terrible way to die.
Yeah.
Just a slow, inevitable death there, you know, and he's just kind of sitting there up against the wall on the stairway.
And the guy just walks by him.
And it's like, I forget who it was when they were on the field there, and it's like, should we just shoot him? Like, why are we letting him go? Like, this is a prisoner of war, and we can't take him with him.
Oh, it's Jackson, I think, who asked it.
Yeah. Dude, if I was Jackson, I'd have been like, I would have just kept an eye on him the entire time. And if he made any weird move, because, like, and I think that was one of, I would think that was, it was a naive decision by Captain Miller to make. Number one was to attack the point, because again, as we just said a moment ago, we understand both sides of attacking or not attacking it.
Yep.
But then, I mean, like, I understand, like, you know, there are, POWs happen, but at the same time, like, you're nowhere close. You're kind of in their sort of territory. Like, you don't know where they've got other battalions or other, like, little camps set up. You know, I mean, there could be one 2 miles or three, you know, maybe even, like, let's say, like, 10 miles down the way. Because he's like, sooner or later, if he just keeps going in that direction, you know, he'll run into our guys. But it's like, do you think the enemy is going to follow what you're trying to tell him to do? Exactly. Hell no. The moment he doesn't see you anymore,
he's going to take off.
Exactly. And that's why I'd have been like, Jackson, if he doesn't keep going straight, shoot him.
At least injure him. Shoot him in the foot. Shoot him in the knee.
I mean, like, he'll bleed out. He won't make it. You know, it doesn't have to be a kill shot. It just has to be something that'll wound him and bleed him. You know what? Here's if I was Jackson, I'd have been like, yo, Mellis, you stay with me, so it's not Jackson all alone. We're gonna head up a little bit, okay? Scout up ahead. I'd have been like, if let's say it was me and you, and I'm Jackson and you're Mellish, I'd be like, Mellish, I'm killing this guy.
Done. Let's go.
And you know, like, go, fire away, boom. We go back to Captain. I heard a shot. What happened? Yeah, Captain, he started running left. We kind of figured he'd probably run into somewhere, you know, that he didn't think we were, you know, we knew about.
It was crazy, Captain. I counted 80 paces. It wasn't even 100, and he just took off going,
I think,
right?
It was 1,000, but, like, yeah, you're counting them, or, like, we're kind of taking bets about, like, you know, how many is that, and, like, maybe 100, just maybe 200, and, you know, we're kind of crouched down, you know, like, hiding, and, yeah, he just started taking off, so...
We took him out.
Done. And guess what? That means Mellish doesn't die in the end.
Yep.
You know, and it's just, I don't know. It's like, I get it. You try to be somewhat compassionate in war, even though that's such, like, a weird thing to say, you know, because it's like, you know, I think it's one of the things I like about Jackson, and where it's like, you know, he's always, like, saying this sort of scripture because he's, like, killing people. But, like, there's a reason. Like, it's like, you know,
you have to,
exactly, you know, and it's like, you're protecting, you know, a lot of people, not just the people that you're surrounded with. It's the people that you don't even know, and you might not ever even meet.
Yeah. And there's that scene in the church where they're sleeping and he's, like, passed out like this.
Yeah, he's like, how does he sleep so well?
He's like, ah, good conscious.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, like, simple. He's just doing the mission.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think that's like, kind of, like, what you would have to set your mind up as. Like, you can't let this, and I know this is far easier said than done, but that scene in the movie is sort of like, he probably thought, you know what, like, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. There's a purpose for him to be there.
Yeah.
There's a reason he's there. Even though, you know, as we've seen and we know in real life, you know, some people are, you know, fresh 18 and get enlisted and they've got, you know, zero experience. So they never even fired a gun before,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we've got people who've, you know, been through it and they just have to kind of keep going, you know, and, but it is a bit of a funny scene though, because again, he's fast asleep and everyone else is awake, just like, you know, kind of quietly chatting or, you know, and, I think it was Miller that says, yeah, we've got, you know, a few more hours and then we got to
2 hours.
Yeah. And then we got a jet. It's like
2 hours. Oh my God.
Yeah. Crazy. Cause it's like, you're just nonstop going.
And that's awful.
Yeah, it really is. Cause you, obviously you want to get there in time, but it's sort of like, again, there's so many variables. So it's like, let's say you rushed as fast as you possibly could to get there, to get to find Ryan. And if he's dead, it's like, we just rushed
for nothing.
For nothing.
Yep.
You know, and it's like saying,
part of the mission though.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, you want to try and find him as fast as possible, but, you know, keeping, and I know that, you know, was actually a thing in real life where, you know, you've got guys that are fatigued in one way or another that have to try and find a way to get through the day, get through the night, get through the mission, get through the battle.
Yep.
You know, and you know, obviously you don't know who, if you're watching like this for like the first time, it's like, you just got to know, like, not everyone's going to make it. Cause
it's war.
Yeah. But again, one of the interesting things about this movie is the amount of actors that are in this.
They're loaded.
Like, you know, it's loaded. I mean, we've kind of said some already, but, you know, like Paul Giamatti's in it. Ted Danson is in it. Ryan Hurst. He can't hear because he, you know, grenade went off by his ear. And, you know, he's like, give me a pencil and write this question.
Yeah, stop screaming.
He's like, do you know Ryan? He's like, this name, you know,
James Francis Ryan. James
Francis from Iowa. Was it Iowa?
From Iowa.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I know him. ? Yeah, who else is in this? We've got, Dennis
Farina. Bryan Cranston with one arm.
Bryan Cranston with one arm. Andrew Scott. You've got Harvey Presnell. Vincent Walsh. Nathan Fillion.
Yep.
Is in this. Let's see. Who else is a pretty... well-known guy, Sam Ellis. It's just loaded, and obviously not everyone has a super big role in it. But
no, like Ted Danson is in one scene, Paul Giamatti's in one scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Bryan Cranston's the same thing. Yeah,
it's awesome,
and that's kind of how Band of Brothers is to a certain extent.
Yeah,
like Jimmy Fallon is in it.
Really?
Yeah, but it's like one scene. He drives up. At night, and like the main squad is trying to get ammo, and they run into a bunch of other people, and it's like, you guys got ammo? I'm like, yeah, we got ammo. And he's like driving like a Jeep. Yeah,
scrub.
I know, dude. But yeah, there's a bunch of other.
Tom Hardy's in Band of Brothers, I think, too.
He is.
As is
Michael Fassbender.
Really?
Yeah, dude. Like, again, like, it's. They're like, we're just going to get a bunch of people, you know, who are, you know, in the earlier parts of acting. I mean, what's his face from freaking Friends is in it, you know? Chandler.
Matthew Perry?
No, not Matthew Perry. Oh, God, what was the other guy that dated Jennifer Aniston? No, he has black hair.
They all have black hair.
Not Joey, not Chandler. Who's the other guy? I'm sure people are listening to this like, this guy doesn't know Friends.
No, I can don't know Friends because I don't watch that.
Yeah,
stupid show.
I you know, I was
Joey?
Never.
No,
it wasn't Joey. It was Chandler.
Chandler? No, not Chandler.
No, it was Ross.
Ross.
David Schwimmer. Yeah, he's in it. Yeah, I was sidebar.
A bunch of idiots.
Sidebar. I never really got into Friends. Like, I've watched, you know, a couple episodes here and there, but
I didn't. I definitely didn't.
I was more of a Seinfeld guy.
Oh, Seinfeld, great show.
Yeah. But yeah, he's in it. It's just crazy.
Huh.
Well, you'll have to watch that, and we'll have to do an episode on that. Same thing, like The Pacific, another great World War II.
Same
thing. It's like, you know, that same crew did Saving Private Ryan, then they did Band of Brothers, The Pacific, and Masters of the Air, which recently came out on Apple TV Plus. So, which that was good too. I enjoyed that. That was really good. But yeah, like just overall an incredible movie. I mean, there's a lot of pretty good cinematics. You know.
A lot.
Scenes. I like the scene when there's like they got like the music in French, and they're asking Upham, like, you know what is she saying? And yeah, like right before the battle
happens. Yep.
Yeah, you know, it's like the calm before the storm moment.
Yep.
For sure. You know, but.
Definitely. I mean, my favorite scene is the D-Day part for sure.
But yeah.
Aside from that, I do like the scene in the, I like the church scene.
Yeah.
Cause you've got Jackson asleep, but you've got everyone talking, Mellish, you know, Upham's over there. Reuben, you got Wade translating Caparzo's bloody letter, not translating, but redoing it.
Yeah.
Then you got Sergeant Cap talking about all kinds of shit. Cap's like, I've had 95 soldiers die, you know, serving for me. But, you know, there's this one kid we all liked. And, you know, I don't know. It's just a really humane moment.
Yeah.
In the middle of war. So.
Yeah, you get a couple of those. And what is it? I think that's also the part where Sarge asks Captain, like, what's going on with his hands?
His hands.
His right hand is like shaking, and it's like nerves, you know. And I think again, that's like a real humane moment where he's the captain, but just because he's the captain doesn't mean he's like super scared.
Well, just like that scene after he loses Wade,
mm-hmm.
He just breaks down.
Yeah.
Breaks down for like 10 seconds, and then he's like, all right, let's get to it.
Well, that's also the scene where, you know, there's like a, and it's kind of funny too, but like they're all kind of betting on like, you know, what he did before the war. And that's like, he kind of goes into it and he's like, I was a school teacher. I taught English.
I was a baseball coach.
I was a baseball coach. You know, he's like, talks about that. And
everyone is just so stunned because it's just like, wait. This is the captain that we've been serving. And it's just a point to be like, it doesn't matter because we're here for a reason and we have to do that reason so we can get back to that.
Yeah.
And that's like his big point is that we have to save Ryan to get him home so that we get home.
Yeah.
And if we don't get home, then we get one step closer to getting home. And by doing that, they win the war.
Yeah, there's a similar type of moment in Band of Brothers too, but I won't ruin that. But it's
no spoilers.
Yeah, and it's funny because me having a degree in English, it's like, dude, like, I don't know why I didn't even think about this before, but it's like, what if, you know, that could have been me, you know, like in just a similar instance, but obviously I wouldn't have been teaching baseball. Been like, I was played hockey, you know, and something like that instead. But, I love how, like, you know, it's the brutality of this movie is kind of split up with these humane moments and in different parts. You know, it's like right before Captain Miller goes off on the mission, right? He's talking to the other, to a major, and he's, you know, there's guys that are pouring coffee and like nice, like tea sets and like, you know,
hot shave,
you know, hot shaven and, you know, like sandwiches, you know, like Reuben sandwiches or whatever there was. And it's like, he's just looking at it kind of like, wait, what?
He's like, I want it.
Yeah. It's like, can I have some coffee and, you know, a nice sandwich and, maybe get a nice little shave, you know?
No, but you'll get this mission.
No, but you got a top, you know, mission from top brass. Come, you know, yeah, special mission. You got to go pull someone out from the war. I was like, does that mean I get to go out of the war too? You know?
I know, right?
And, you know, it's an interesting moment because when Captain Miller is telling the major, again, I believe it was the major, and he's kind of like looking at the map and he's like kind of directing like kind of like where here and here. And the major is looking at him kind of like explaining all. And I feel like the major was like really impressed with Captain Miller because he knew him too. He like called him like by his first name. If I remember correctly, it was like John.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, yeah, so he knows who he is. And it's like, he's just looking at him with almost like a bit of admiration. Like, you know, this guy actually knows his stuff. But he's also an English teacher and a baseball coach.
And you don't find out for 2 hours.
Yeah. You know, and obviously like at the end when he's, you know, dying up against sandbags or whatever. And it was sandbags, right?
I think
it was
a wall. It was a motorcycle.
Yeah. It was a vehicle. Remember there was a wheel there.
Yeah.
But you know, Ryan comes up and he whispers in his ear, you know, earn it. And I got goosebumps because it was just like one of those things where when it transitions back into like the present day when he's looking at his tombstone and he's like, I hope I've lived my life the way you would have wanted me to live it, you know? And then his like wife comes up and is like, tell me I've been a good man. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, it just, it's again, it's crazy to think
that. And it was a guy he only really knew for a few hours.
Yeah. It's like you fought in one battle with him. This guy came here, lost two of his guys, told me to leave. I said no. And he dies in the process. And pretty much, I think it was who only lived from his squad at the end. Reuben. It was
Upham.
And Upham, yeah. Everyone else died.
Yep.
So it's like everyone else in his squad that came there was died except for two guys. And his last words were, "Earn it." Like, I hope this guy, you know, is worth it, worth my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I think one of the other tragic things, I think just about anyone that, you know, fights in a war, but, you know, it's like they'll never know if, I mean, maybe they do, you know, up in the above, but it's like they'll never know if the war was actually won or not because they gave their life for it, yep. Which is kind of a haunting thing. But, yeah, it's, I think just because I hadn't watched in a while and, like I know that happens, but just to kind of watch it again, you realize like what a powerful moment that is because it just makes you think. And I think also just because of like the context of it's the 80th anniversary, this movie was just a phenomenal movie made by, you know, the one and only Steven Spielberg.
Oh my God.
And then you've also got John Williams doing the soundtrack. Like just that, when we talk about John Williams, this movie never gets brought up and it's just like,
it doesn't.
It's like, oh, Jurassic Park, you know, Jaws, Star Wars, Harry Potter, and it's like, and then meanwhile, like Saving Private Ryan's in the corner, like, hey guys, what about me? You know,
and Saving Private Ryan actually won a few Academy Awards, I think, too.
It did, and you know, again, like it's you know, arguably one of the best, if not the best, war movie ever made. Sure. So, you know, you got, again, you've got this scene that it resonates, and you think about the 80th anniversary, and I guess I got a little upset, one of the things that upsets me is when you think about, you watch this movie, you read about the stories in the history books, but then you realize that people gave their lives for the war to protect this country and other countries, other people, other peoples, you know, and when people have like zero disregard for like the country or like the flag, it's like the only thing that comes to mind is like, you're just ungrateful.
Yeah.
You know, and you have zero clue of like the weight that people, you know, gave their life for. It's like, they don't think that really, like, I don't think they really comprehend it. Like, I don't think it really like sinks into their being like well enough. And it's sort of like, maybe you just need to like, you know, get locked in a chair and have your eyes, you know, held open the entire time so you can understand what happened.
They probably just didn't learn it.
Yeah, or they didn't pay attention, or yeah, like, again, like, you know,
care to learn it.
And but like, it's kind of like you said the last time we were talking about Sopranos, where like, we know a lot of people that have not seen a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great movie as an example where it's like, okay, I get it. You don't want to sit down in a class and listen to history and blah, 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 and school is boring. Then watch a movie that I understand, yeah, this might not be 100% accurate. And obviously, like, the story is made up, but the events that took place in this movie actually happened in real life.
Yeah.
You know, D-Day is a real thing. World War II is a real thing, you know, and so
it captures a small, I'm sure, part of the brutality that is war too. So,
oh yeah, 100%, you know, I mean, and that's why I think, again, like Band of Brothers is definitely another one of those things where, you know, paints that picture very well. And then it's again same thing with the Pacific. Like, you, it's in an entirely different part of the world, but it's still the same war.
Yeah.
You know, Masters of the Air, same war, different perspective. You know, you've got the bombers, you know, you've got, you know, the bombers from Africa, you've got the, you know, the Brit bombers. Like, there's a lot of aspects that's one of the things too about Masters of the Air. Like, when you hear about like the numbers and like the things that happened, and you know, that show is based off a book who, you know, the writer wrote about from, you know, real life stories from World War II. So again, there's like actual historic and factual relevance there.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, the people just, it kind of pisses me off. And I know not everyone that's listening to this is from the US, and, you know, but just for the sake of understanding context and importance behind historical value.
Yes.
You know, where you have people from your country that gave their lives for you. Cause, you know, I mean, again, there's a whole ceremony that took place on June 6th mm-hmm. of veterans that are still alive, you know, and it's like for them to think about, man, I fought here 80 years ago. Like, you can only imagine what's going through their heads, you know, like, or, you know, what kind of emotions they were feeling. But, and again, like, we'll never know. We watch a movie and we just think this is brutal, you know? And I mean, it's just one of those things where I'm obviously like, thankful to be here. Mm-hmm. And, it was like, you and I might not be able to sit in this same room and record this episode if things turned out a different way. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
there's a value behind it. The other good thing about this movie is it was made on a $65 to $70 million budget, and it got $482.3 million in the box office.
Wild.
Yeah, as a very brutal rated R movie. So,
which when you think about it, with how big this movie is,
yeah,
that's not that bad of a budget.
It's really not, you know. And again, a lot of it was practical, and I think that's something we have repeatedly said about movies these days, that overspend on budgets and want to use a lot of CGI, and it's like, you know, you could really make a great movie to this day and age with more practical effects in different ways and less visual effects.
Apparently, Minus One actually had a budget closer to $10
million. Yeah, because
it's just like you don't need to have these inflated budgets to make a great movie.
Because like you think about this, right? It's like, okay, we've got $50 million to spend on this movie, or what did I say, 65, right? You think, oh, well, yeah, I mean, we could spend a portion on that on like visual effects, but damn, like, you know, that may make the budget go up. But there again, you've got Steven Spielberg, you know, I mean, I'm just going to say one word, and that's all I have to say, Jaws. You know,
Jaws gave him Final Cut for life.
So it was not a, there was zero visual effects with that shark, you know, in that movie.
Nope.
And I mean, same thing with Jurassic Park, you know? So, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I mean, like you have to know how to make a movie or a TV show. And, you know, I think there are certain companies that spend overspend.
Easy. Huh? Easy. Down, boy. Down.
One word, Disney. particularly in either A, Marvel, or B, Lucasfilm. We've seen it in some DC movies, you know? And, it's different where you look at some other rated R movies. I mean, again, like we're talking about Godzilla Minus One, which was the number one purchase movie on iTunes and the most watched movie on Netflix, which has never been done before, and a movie that spent somewhere between $10 and $15 million, and you know, quintupled that in the box office, if not more. And now I haven't checked to see what DVD sales or digital sales have been so far, but I'm sure it's probably a lot. I bought it, you know, for $15 as soon as I could. But for Saving Private Ryan, though, like you've got a ton of actors, so you've got to pay a bunch of people, and you've got to make the effects, and you know, buy all this equipment and buy all this other stuff. And I mean,
all the extras.
Oh yeah, all the extras. I mean, you're filming in another country, right? So you've got to find a bunch of, locations and spots, rule stuff off, but
They built the town in the end.
I did recall that, yes. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, building sets is not easy either. So
crazy.
Yeah. What else was it? I mean, obviously again, like definitely one of the best things. Talking about the accuracy, this is a pretty interesting quote that says, it's accurate for that unit on that bit of the beach on that day, but you can't say that's what Didi was like because it wasn't. Omaha Beach is about 3.5 miles long. What's happening at one of the end of the beach is not what's happening at the other end. And you know, obviously, again, that's where like the matter of history comes into play, because there are different effects. But at the same time, like, you know, you've got, you know, a long and arduous battle ahead that did last a long time in certain spots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another example would be like, with like Dunkirk, right? Like you've got everything that's kind of centralized in this one spot, but that beach went on for a long way, you know.
Iwo Jima too.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see here, some interesting home media facts. It was the most successful rental debut of its time in 1999, earning $9.6 million in its first week.
Wow.
And $44 million by July 1999.
Sheesh.
There was a making of documentary and a message from Spielberg about D-Day and the National D-Day Museum.
I think it's part of the special features on the DVD.
Yeah. Let's see here. And it was released on a 2-disc Blu-ray in May 2010.
I own it.
Including all previous release special features for Price of Peace. And for the film's 20th anniversary, is a 3-disc one and, you know, 4K one as well. But that's crazy, though. I mean, like, 9.6 million renting from, like, Blockbuster, dude, and other places. Just, man, I love that. I love that.
What would you give it score wise?
I mean, it's, I'd probably give it like a 94. Like high, like, you know, I'm definitely somewhere like I was thinking about this was it yesterday or the day before. I was like, you know, it definitely feels like a 90 to me, but I'm like, but there's just, the more I talk about it and I think about it,
it's
just
like kind of 95.
Keep, yeah, mm-hmm. it's like it just keeps going up, you know.
It's, this is, like I said earlier, before we started recording.
Yeah,
Jurassic Park is good. Yeah. But this is just like,
yeah,
I mean, this is just good from start to finish.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think we're basically like in agreement. It's like 94, 95.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I mean, everywhere you look, it's just that now I kind of want to do a ranking of all the best of, or just not all the best, but all the war movies.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Well,
because there's a ton out there. I mean, you know,
we're gonna go ahead and make it, real life war movies.
Yeah,
no Lord of the Rings or Hobbit.
No. But like, it's sort of like, you know, would we want to include like Inglourious Bastards?
No, you can't. You can't.
I'm talking like movies like 1917,
like War, Fury, like, yeah, war movies.
Yeah, like Platoon, right?
Paths of Glory.
Yeah, I guess we, Full Metal Jacket.
Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now. Dude, yeah, man.
We Were Soldiers.
Yeah. All right, we might have to do this. But I haven't seen some in a while, so.
Yeah, there's a lot I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Damn, what's another one?
So if you're listening.
Oh.
What?
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder? Man. I mean, that's not a real war movie.
It's not, but
funny enough, when I was getting my windows tinted, the other day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was chilling like in the like the lobby, and the guy that was working on my car, he's like, yeah, just make yourself at home, just, you know, like, you know, there's like coffee, there's like, you know, Wi-Fi, and, you know, it's kind of just on my phone, but. There was a TV, and it's like, had a TV in there. It's like, just, you know, put it whatever you want on. And I went through it. I'm like, oh, Tropic Thunder.
You just popped on Tropic Thunder.
Dude, yeah. It was kind of like, it wasn't from the beginning. It was about like halfway through.
Oh, such a great movie.
But I was like, man, I love this. This is great. So, yeah. We will be covering that movie at some point. But
oh, yes.
But yeah, I mean, I know there's people out there who haven't seen Saving Private Ryan, and I mean, if you haven't seen Saving Private Ryan, you need to. I think it's definitely a must-watch movie, regardless, you know.
It definitely is, and it's a great war movie, but it's also,
yeah,
just a great movie. I mean, the acting.
The acting's great.
Great, the cinematography, the story, and of story. Course the plot.
Yep, great plot.
It's a good movie, and it moves pretty quick for being what, two and a half hours, I think.
Yeah, it's I think it was like 170 minutes. So yeah,
damn, and it moves pretty quick.
It does. You know, it. I feel like there's like one or two spots where it feels like it's a longer movie, but you're like, no, like you're like, wow, that's already kind of halfway done, and. You know, then that you just get encapsulated by again, like by the certain intense moments, like, you know, when the battles kind of take place, but, you know, the non-battles are meaningful too. And again, yeah. Like there's, you know, there's good characterizations, you know, from everyone. And again, like you need to have those off battle moments in order to start to kind of care about the characters and kind of get to know them a little more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not just like, all right, well, here's a squad and like, okay, well, don't really know what any of them are about. And, oh, well, all right, there goes Vin Diesel's character. Didn't really know much about him. It's like, I don't care. But it's like, no, you kind of do, because you kind of get to see a little bit more. And obviously the characters that make it to the end, you care more about.
Yeah.
And that's obviously like, that's the purpose. So, yeah. And again, that's why, you know, there's just a lot of great writing and a lot of, hey, keep saying the word great, but just, you know, fantastic things about this movie from top to bottom.
Top to bottom.
I'm trying to think if Spielberg did another movie between Jurassic Park and this that was like an absolute banger.
I think he did Schindler's List.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, is that it? Is that? I guess that's not considered an actual war movie, but yeah, so let's see here. We've got, let's see, Jurassic Park was 93. Yeah, Schindler's List was the same year. And then
Lost World.
Amistad. That's right. And then he did Saving Private Ryan. Amistad. Yeah, I remember that. I haven't seen that in a long time.
What came after Saving Private Ryan?
AI, artificial intelligence.
AI, which is Stanley Kubrick's movie.
That was decent, but then he does Minority Report.
Oh.
And then he did Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, great movie.
Then he did The Terminal.
Another good movie.
War of the Worlds.
Oh, dude, his War of the Worlds movie is awesome.
It is. You know,
I love that movie.
I remember seeing it in the theater, and I was like, I don't know if I loved it, but...
I loved it.
I liked it.
I loved it.
And then it...
that was 2005.
Yeah. And then he did Munich.
Huh. Never seen it.
Co-written by Tony Kushner and Eric Roth.
What else we got?
1984 book, Vengeance, by George Jonas. Then he did... Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
LOL.
Lols.
First half of that's good.
Yeah. Then he did The Adventures of Tintin.
I forgot about that.
Same. War Horse.
Oh, also forgot about that.
Yeah, I forgot about that too. And then he did Lincoln.
Oh, yeah.
With the legendary Daniel Day-Lewis.
Jeez.
By far considered one of the greatest actors of all time.
Fact.
Bridge of Spies.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good one, actually.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. Cold War. I mean, yep. They might have to watch that and throw that in there. The BFG. I don't know if I've seen that, actually.
No, you didn't. It was like a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Kind of.
The Post. Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks.
Nope, never seen that one.
Interesting. Maybe I haven't seen that one. Ready Player One, saw that.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
West Side Story.
Oh, yeah, boo.
Yeah, no, I didn't like that. And the last movie he did was 2022, the Fablemans.
Oh, yeah, it's a movie about himself.
Yeah. Loosely based on, yes. Okay. I haven't seen that, actually, but... I mean, you know, he doesn't need to make any more movies. Like, he doesn't have to, unless he really wants to. He's 77 years old.
So. His next movie is apparently his untitled UFO one.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we'll see about that.
That's right.
I'm sure it'll be good.
Yeah. Huh. But, yeah, definitely go out and watch the movie if you haven't seen it. And if it's been a while, yeah, maybe go back and watch it for the 80th anniversary of D-Day.
Definitely watch it.
In memoriam.
It's on... I watched it on Peacock.
I watched it on Paramount, actually, but... I have it on DVD somewhere on Blu-ray, but I think it's in a box that...
Yeah,
I have not taken it out of my closet.
No, I'm not doing it. Right, I don't even have anything to watch.
Oh, yeah, that's the other problem. We talked off record here.
Digital.
Yeah. Digital is the way to go, which is funny because I actually think it's $5 on, or if it's either $5 or $7 on iTunes right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, well, damn.
Watch on there.
And it's in 4K too. So it's like, well, man, there you go. And most of the time, like, it'll say, like, it includes, like, special features and stuff like that. So, you know, you get that if you're into that kind of stuff. But, so, yeah, that'll do it for us here. I don't know what we're doing next, but just stay tuned and we'll find out.
Well,
actually, I do know we will eventually get to Furiosa.
Eventually, huh?
Yeah. I got to go see it sometime. Yeah. Yeah. It's on my list of things to watch.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, we actually didn't go see Apes either.
We didn't.
But I'd like to do that because I've heard good things about
Double feature?
Yeah, maybe.
That's about 5 hours worth of movie. We'll make it work.
Yeah.
Blaze in between pizza.
Yeah, pizza. Yeah.
Blaze pizza.
Yeah, Blaze pizza. If you don't know about Blaze pizza, you should go check that out as well. So, in the States at least. But and if you visit the States, go to Blaze.
Yep, if it's available.
As your touring attraction though. So good pizza, customize it, all kind of stuff. Great dough and toppings. But anyway, that'll do it for us here at The Plot.